Welcome to the Displacement Urbanism podcast series, hosted through the London School of Economics. My name is Dr. Romola Sanyal, and I am Associate Professor in Urban Geography at the Department of Geography and Environment here at the LSE. In this podcast series, we explore how cities and displacement co-constitute each other. As we see millions of displaced people moving to cities and millions of people displaced in cities around the world, the questions of how these processes intersect are crucial. In this podcast, I will be interviewing a range of actors, including those who have been displaced in different ways and those who are involved in the management and the study of displacement. We will be going around the world to explore the different issues around this topic. I hope the podcast offers an opportunity to open up conversations around the politics and processes of displacement and urbanization, the different ways it can be experienced, understood, and approached. I also hope that the podcast demonstrates how these are global and interconnected issues, but also one that draws our attention to its local specificities. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode, which is titled Eviction and Urbanization, A View from Recife. We are delighted to be joined by Flavio de Souza, who is a professor in the MPhil PhD program in urban development at the Federal University of Pernambuco, and is also chairman of the Research Committee on Housing and the Built Environment for the International Sociological Association. He was a visiting professor at the University of Texas at Austin and at the University of Buenos Aires. He is an architect and urban planner with a master's degree in urban design and a PhD in planning from Oxford Brookes University in the UK. He has been developing research on housing for the urban poor for more than 30 years. Welcome to the podcast, Flavio.
Thank you. And thank you very much for the invitation, Romola.
So I wanted to start with asking a more general question, which is if you could please give us an overview of the history of informal settlement and evictions in Brazil and in Recife more specifically, please.
So this is quite a difficult question, and because it has a very big answer for that. Housing for the poor in Brazil is difficult to have a record on that because the poor hasn't been recorded, until the end of the 18th century, maybe beginning of the 19th century. So it means that we don't have a full record in terms of the history of housing for the poor. But considering that, we have quite a good record on the issue of when the problem became more acute. And it can be claimed that it was because of the transformation of the economy here that was based on sugar plantation, for example, or even coffee or all the things that we all know about Brazilian economy in the past. And mainly because of industrialization and the end of slavery, many people needed to work and moved from rural areas to urban areas in that time. And of course, it increased the demand for housing in the cities. But it's not exactly this particular event that creates more demand for housing for the poor, but it increases considerably. There has been some events as well that was related to pandemic as well. Sanitary policies that tried to evict slums almost everywhere. So it also happened here in Brazil, but people evicted what we call favela today, but also what we call cortiços, which are housing units that are done in subdivided housing within the city center that has been abandoned or something like that. So the history of housing for the poor is quite a long one. And it increased considerably in the 50s. When there was this almost forced migration from rural areas to urban areas towards urbanization. Then land invasions started to happen, especially in Recife, for example. And there was some policies trying to constrain this movement, but also there was the support of the Catholic Church that were really supportive in trying to help people to find housing for themselves. But we had a very recent event that was not so good for the poor, not for everybody here in reality. It was the military regime that started in 64 up to 1985. So during this time, most housing alternatives for the poor were more or less constrained. But also it was when a full policy started to really implement the housing bank, the National Housing Bank, and the financial system. So in a way, it was more or less controlled, the land invasion, but also it was when it started to have a real and a proper housing policy. It was during this period. The housing bank, the National Housing Bank, was meant to deliver housing for meeting the demand, but in a way that it should be for everybody. But because it was a bank, what happened was the housing policy started to move towards those who could afford the housing financed by the government. So, which means that it was more meant to the better off, and the poor were left almost alone.
I was wondering what you thought were the logic and reasons being used for evictions nowadays in Recife?
It really depends, because there's a huge range of reasons for that. There are the same reasons, which are related to a land owner, a private land owner, want to reclaim their land possession, and then they start to claim in court. If the court decides that the landowner should have his land back or his or her land back, then families will be evicted. But also it is happening nowadays because most people who remained living in these neighborhoods are settled along riverbanks or flooded areas, basically in environmentally protected areas nowadays. So it has been more or less, I would claim, a dispute between the right to the environment and the right to housing. Both of them are legitimate, but we should also consider that people have been living in these neighborhoods for 50 or 60 years already, and basically they need housing to survive. So if we nowadays are more concerned, which is fair enough, with the environment and all the climate changes consequences, we need to provide people alternatives to live in proper homes, if not by helping them to settle in the areas, at least to provide in a different neighborhood proper housing. So in reality, what is happening today, and it's really happening now in Recife, is that the municipality of Recife is starting a new housing program to basically clear all those areas that are along riverbanks and on environmentally protected areas. So it means that due to the need of recovering these areas to avoid the negative effects of climate changes, including to these people who live in these areas who suffer most, but not necessarily they are providing alternatives to new housing areas. So it's been a concern and might be something really, I predict that something very not really good for those who are living in these areas because they may not be offered proper housing.
So just building on that point then, local governments are often heavily involved in that process, and there's some institutional knowledge practices of these processes. So I just wanted to ask you about how is the eviction process and the understanding of the rights of people different now than before? So, you know, how does the local government play a role in this?
Right, that's a very important question, especially because Recife is really well known and is happy to be well known to be the birthplace of a policy which is called the Law of Favelas, and its name ZEIS, which is Zonas Especiais de Interesse Social, which would be more or less something like special zones of social interest. It was really
policy developed in implemented by the World Bank. It was jointly developed here and in Belo Horizonte. So we claim we are the first ones to have this policy, but in reality, it doesn't really matter. It was in the end, in the middle of the 80s, here in Recife, started in 1979 with a big project called Project Recife. It is claimed to be the largest and the biggest amount that the World Bank put into a housing program in Brazil. But it ended up developing this policy in 1983, which is the declaration of ZEIS. But it was only enacted as a municipal law in 1987. So that's why I say more or less in the middle of the 80s. It's like a signal that the residents have the prospects of having legal title deeds and something to improve the housing conditions. So it has a twofold program. One is specifically towards the legalization of title deeds, and the other one is to provide the means, financial means, housing materials or whatever, to improve the physical housing conditions of the families, either to the neighborhoods, such as pavement, electricity, sewage, and everything, all the services, and to the housing unit itself. But what happened is legalization of title deeds is not a simple thing. It might take about 40 years to clear all the titles or even more, but physical improvements are quick. What I mean is by quick is 2, 3, or maybe 5 years. But in comparison to the legalization process, it's really quick. So what happened is we have this history. We have the Catholic Church, all the NGOs, helping individuals to fight for their rights. We also have in Brazil in general, we're very proud of this idea of the right to the city. And it is really in our Brazilian constitution. Yeah, so it's the right to the city, the right to housing and everything. But in reality, what might be happening now is really the opposite. Sometimes not everybody will agree with me, but what is happening now is that the local authorities, and it's not a particular case for Recife, which has this history, we should be implementing housing policies towards the facilitation and the delivery of rights to the housing in Recife. But not only in the city, but it's happening almost everywhere in Brazil, that the local authorities are more or less forgiving. It's like the history, institutional history, is almost being erased. Not completely erased, but it's happening is that the policy should be, or at least it was, it used to be, that it's adverse possession rights, which we call usucapião, especial urbano, due to the passage of time. It is 5 times. If a person is occupying a land which was initially occupied peacefully without any reaction or opposition by the landlord, then it's a declaration. The judiciary should just declare that the land now belongs to the occupant. But in reality, the municipality is no longer doing that. They are preferring to, which is fair, it is fair, it's to compensate the landowner for their land. But if there is this prediction in the law that possession is as important as property rights, and if the owner has to occupy the land to really claim possession of it, since the occupants are the people who are living in their shacks, in their housing, whatever we want to call it, and if possession disputes property, then we should simply declare, because the owner lost his rights of property because of passage of time and because of possession. But in reality, what is happening is the municipalities are preferring somehow to compensate the owners when they no longer are entitled to that. The real owners should be those who are living in these neighborhoods. But in reality, it's not happening. So it's somehow that the institutional history is almost forgotten.
So let me just go the other way. How is protest different today? So what are the different ways in which people protest, and what are the different kinds of actors who are involved in advocating for the rights of people? And does it make a difference? So how does that feed into how the local governments are responding to some of these issues?
Well, in the 70s, people used to go to the streets to block roads, to put fire on tires and this kind of things, which in a way was more related to rebellions, being a rebellion, I mean, being a rebel, sorry, and making a rebellion. But in a way, it shocked more the citizens, the people living in the city, so they could see that those people existed. I'm not claiming that they are completely invisible, but we don't tend to see those living in favelas because they are more or less settled in areas where people don't really see inside. And most of individuals really who live outside the favelas avoid getting inside the favelas. So it is a way that it was, and it used to be when those who were living there were suffering all those problems that they know better than us, they would go out and protest. Well, it used to go quite well in terms of authorities' response, because it usually became very complicated. Well, we now live with smartphones and internet, and so people tend to put videos or even messages in their social media. That's how people tend to protest today. And unfortunately, it might be useful and good and legitimate, but don't call much attention on how authorities should respond in terms of emergency or whatever. So I think that sometimes it's useful, sometimes it's really reasonable and it works properly. But apparently, in terms of the rights for housing for the poor, it's not necessarily working well. So whenever we have an eviction or the prospects of eviction, somehow some communities still go outside, and they stop. When they block a street, for example, it makes a huge traffic jam, it makes a congestion everywhere, and it's usually in rush time, so it's quite effective. So when they do it, it causes, okay, many people will think that they are doing bad things, whatever, but for the local authorities, this might become an issue that is at least alive.
Could you give us a couple of examples of communities organizing to stop evictions?
I think I can give you two examples. The first one would be the most famous one, and it's named after the Occupy Wall Street, and it was well known here as Occupy Stellita. It is along a very important avenue that links the most expensive neighborhood in Recife, which is called Boa Viagem, to the city center. And it used to be a place where it was stored sugar cane and sugar itself that was exported. So this area was more or less abandoned. So there was a local developer, actually in partnership with international developers as well, who wanted to promote a very large urban renewal program with several high-rising buildings And in Brazil, high-rising buildings can be for the very rich. People occupy the area in the manner that I was talking earlier. They really camped, put tents, makes nice parties, and it was really fancy in a way. But also using those medias that I was telling you, yeah. What happened was we had this economic crisis worldwide, and it eventually came here. So it gave a false impression that this movement was successful. But what really happened was it had a pause, and then when the economy started to be more or less active again, they quickly removed everybody and they started building the high-rise buildings. So what is happening now, they are finishing 3 high-rise buildings, but they are planning to do some, I think, 13 more. And they even hired the most expensive and well-known landscape planner in Brazil to do this very nice fancy park along the river, which is just in front of the buildings. This was something like a trade-off. They would turn this area public, like a public park, even though it's almost more or less private owned, because it would be surveilled by the people who live in these nice and fancy buildings. But in a way, it would be good for the cities. So what happened is, this is one of our example. It wasn't really successful, unfortunately, but it gave the impression temporarily. And I could say that there's another one which is not well known, really. It is, I would name it the Blue River Community Movement. It is a small community which is located along, it used to be located on the riverbank, but they opened a street just along the river in the 90s. So part of the community has been already moved. But those who remained in the area were quite comfortable living there because they used to, I mean, they occupied the area in the mid-80s. So it's been a long time. But there was one owner of a small plot that entered into court claiming repossession of his land. And what happened was the lawyer the local community, the Blue River community, hired a lawyer. But the lawyer somehow lost a particular date that he should provide a document, something very technical like this. It's really common to lose a process when lawyers lose their the actual time for submitting a document. And what happened was, simply the owner regained repossession of his land, and there was a judge that signed the repossession of land, and the community has something like I think it's 1 week to remove all those belongings, because they would put a bulldozer and they will remove possibly the whole community. What happened was, there is a local leader there, that it was a group of 5 women. They were called Proactive Women. They got together in 2015, they got together to run this like a mother group. And they wanted to give opportunity to the children living in the neighborhood. They don't have just going to and attending public schools, because all public schools in Brazil or in Recife are full-time, especially for children who are under 11, I think. It's just part-time. So they offered, and the counter turn, a place for them to get together, to have some lessons in Portuguese, math, English, cooking, whatever. And so they got this link between them, and they were really well connected as well, because sometimes they got support from local politicians. So they started to react very fast, and they called for help from many people, whoever was involved with that, even me, I even was involved. And I got, I used this media as well. I sent messages to many people as well. And I, well, they managed to get support from the local church that wasn't given support for the last 20 years. I think the Comissão de Justiça e Paz is a Justice and Peace Commission, which was very famous and active in the 70s and 80s, was a little bit inactive, but they got involved and they were active as well. And so many people got involved. Even the Secretary of Housing, the Municipal Secretary of Housing got involved, and they managed to get a successful history and an outcome. And what happened was they had their area declared as ACE, which is the initial step to get, as I said, legalized and whatever, even though we don't have this history any longer, but it is somehow a positive response from the municipality. And they also managed to get not compensation for the landowner. They actually managed to get successful response from the municipality using the adverse possession rights. It was somehow a connection between the local defense, the municipal local defense lawyer, and some of the people who were involved in giving suggestions and whatever. So they got these two responses. One, the declaration of ZEIS. Two, the adverse possession rights. But what happened was, because of the pandemic and because of so many things, they lost the timing again in terms of the adverse possession rights. So they are somewhere in between gaining full rights, but not necessarily right now. But what happened is they need to restart the process. They need to get together again to get help from many advocates, all again, the whole history. But that's somehow what is happening. And unfortunately, the history of Blue River community is not alone. This was something that happened, right? I mean, in the past 5 years, it's still happening, it's still active, but it is a successful, or more or less a successful story. But what is happening to many other communities, not like this. They have been evicted and they didn't have success. Somehow, it is happening for many reasons, to open new access roads, to install, to build a terminal for buses or whatever. It's some things which are necessary for the city. It's always like this. It's something that has a good rationale. But the thing is, it shouldn't be considered more important than housing for rights. It should be considered as important as.
Actually, on that point, I wanted to ask, what happens to the people who are evicted? What are the outcomes for them, but also for the city?
Right. Well, when I say evicted, I'm putting so many different things in the same umbrella. Some of them are really, really evicted. They just get expelled from their houses and they go and live whatever they are capable of finding the new places. Some of them are compensated, but with so low prices that they will not be able to find a house, or even if the people were selling just a room anywhere in the neighborhood, and most of them even anywhere in Recife itself. So some of them are moving towards into the metropolitan region of Recife, where land values are a little bit lower. And most of them would be invaded land that are not interesting for those who are in the formal housing market, which is the land along riverbanks and where you have environmentally protected areas. So this cycle starts again. So somehow, yeah, that's more or less what happens to those people. They are more involved in the beginning, where they used to occupy land in the 70s and 80s, not because they want, but because as a response and unfortunately negative response from the local municipality.
So I guess as the last question, possibly, what do you think the future is for informal settlements in Recife?
Right. I used to say that the future has two, it can be twofold, folded. The thing is, let's imagine that the whole land is legalized. It might be a dream. It might be a dream that comes true for many people living in there. But somehow I see that whatever it happens, like I say, whatever a small settlement is fully legalized, there is a return to informality somehow, because the process of selling their properties is so complicated and so expensive that they tend to do it informally. What I mean by just having a receipt, not really getting registration in the municipality, in even worse, and not in the notary public. It's because it's really expensive. But I know that the Brazilian governments are trying to simplify that, making things more quicker and also cheaper. The first registration really is free, but it won't be the first registrations ever, since they are going to sell it to other person. But somehow what I think the future might be, and it's really difficult to say that, it's to continue as informal. Because if you are informal, living in an informal settlement, those who are willing to buy your land and develop towards formal housing won't be interested. What I mean is, most of the favelas who have been declared zones in Recife are really well located in the city. So there is a pressure on the land markets towards the development of these areas into those fancy and expensive neighborhoods. So if it's fully legalized, in a way, it's a paradox, because then you put informal land into formal markets. And it might start a process. I know that I don't have evidence on that. Yeah. Fortunately, I'm really happy that I don't have the evidence for that. But considering that there is no barrier towards the formalization, towards the activation of formal land markets, then people would be really tempted to sell their houses for a proper price. But they will not be able again to live in the neighborhood or nearby, because the land values are getting really, really high in these areas. It's just in these areas, which if we had a graph showing the prices, I mean the land values in the areas, it has a huge drop, because you have some limitations in terms of you can't put two lots together, for example. You can't build higher than four stories. You have so many restrictions that it really makes land not really attractive for the market. But once you just forget, let's say you declare that this area is no longer Zays, because it lost his initial purposes and rationale for that. People have been fully integrated in the city by physical integrations and the legalization of land. So they are normal citizens, full citizens, and everybody. Good. But on the other hand, the land becomes a quite disputable commodity in market. And I'm sorry, I really think that the better off would be, again, a better off. in this process.
So it's sort of, you know, they're caught between two very different, difficult choices, to either live in an informal settlement or to get dispossessed of the place that they're living in.
There are alternatives.
Okay.
For example, in Brazil, we have the CRRU, which is concession of real right to use, which is like a lease contract, and it's valid for 50 years, renewable upon agreement between the local authorities and those who are living there. In a way, we have the answer for that, which is not full title deeds. And that's the main issue, because what we are doing now is to, there is a national program, it's not only in Recife, is trying to put this idea that you only become a real citizen if it's full and individual title deeds. And that's a big mistake. That's a big mistake. The legalization of land should not be a reason to put people at risk. It should really be something to recognize their rights to housing and the right to the city. If you just deliver full and individual title deeds, they might become more and more vulnerable. We say that people living in favelas are vulnerable. Yes, they are, but they are not now as vulnerable as they might be if they become full property owners. The full title deed is really attractive for the land market. And it's not a demand for those who live in the favelas. They already believe their houses belong to them. All they need is some protection, is some kind of rights that entitle them to compensation when there is a need for that, and also to succession, to resolve the problems of hires and this kind of thing, when you die, what you'd leave for your children. But they don't really need full title deeds. This is the misunderstanding of us who are trying to implement a policy as such as we were dealing with people who can choose where to live, when to move, who can really pay for their houses. It's not like this. I think that we are all equal. Yes, we should treat everybody equal. But in terms of this power to decide where to buy, when to live, it's the pool are really different. They are not equal. They can't really afford proper housing. And if it's full legalized, the price go up. Especially because it's not because the neighbor would want to buy the house and put to rent. It's because somebody outside, not only in Recife itself, but we are now dealing with international corporations that are investing hugely in building construction. So it's something like that we cannot really predict. But we can see almost everywhere that cities, neighborhoods, areas have been built, and we don't see anybody living there. It's like empty blocks, just for the sake of the investors who are making money out of this. And how can we have power to say you are not entitled to enter in this pool area? We now have declared that it's no longer a ZEIS. We have provided full and individual title deeds, so you negotiate individually, which makes people even more vulnerable. So if it's something like collective rights or anything that is not individual title deeds, that might be the answer. I'm not saying that this should be just left like a laissez-faire policy, leave them as they are. But informality in this manner is something that is not full individual title deeds who are really, really a commodity who are disputed in the market.
I think that's a really powerful way to sort of close off that discussion. So thank you so much, Flavio, for being on the podcast with us today and for sharing your insights and your work as well. We're really, really grateful that you gave us your time.